Right now, I am lying outside on the grass, staring up at the stars, and it's about 4:52 in the morning. The moon is out bright, and I figured I had to come out here to get in the right frame of mind to ponder some questions about immensity that I've been thinking about. And immensity might be an odd word to choose here, but I think it's related to that feeling of awe that we often feel, or at least I often feel, when we look out at the universe and just see the scope and scale of it, the number of stars, and then you combine it with some kind of intellectual sense that it's not just a painting, that we know that maybe there's, you know, hundreds of billions, trillions of stars that we're staring at, and that it goes on for 13 billion light years. So anyway, let's get into it. Some questions I've been ruminating about with in relationship to immensity. Question number one, are we the only animal who feels immensity or that feeling of awe? Like, think of a bug. Does a bug get that feeling of awe when it looks up at the sky? I'm not even sure what it would see at the sky, or any other animal. And of course, you can feel awe and appreciation of immensity without the stars. I mean, it could be a big mountain, it could be a large vista, a beautiful cloud formation, something that kind of widens your eyes and makes you feel really small, I guess would be the best definition, wouldn't it? So are we the only animal that experiences awe? Maybe that's a better way to phrase it. I certainly don't know. I'd like to learn more about it. But my first thought is that the way that I express awe is often just lie down in the grass and look up. And it's, as an apex predator, that's kind of a privileged thing I get to do, because there's not much that threatens me, at least in this environment. And so maybe that human thing where we get to revel in awe, revel in that feeling of immensity and just sit and soak it in, that is a reflection of our apex predatorness. It's a real privilege. And of course, we alone probably possessed knowledge, intellectual knowledge of the depth and size and magnitude of space and what we're actually looking at are not just pinpricks of light, but, you know, burning balls of gas that are bigger, much bigger than our sun, or perhaps even galaxies, obviously. But I think on a deeper level, there's some really intimate connection between awe and fear or trepidation. And I'd like to think more about that, because certainly I think all animals experience fear to one extent or another. And so, like, what's the difference? I guess maybe what's the difference between the feeling we get when we stare out at space and feel so small versus when a, you know, 12-foot bear comes along and we feel so small? Obviously, our adrenaline doesn't kick in when we look at space, but we still have that feeling of smallness. And so is there a connective thread between those two emotions of awe and that mortal fear that we get when confronted with something that's much bigger than us and a danger to us? I'm not sure. Okay, next question. I think this is one of the big ones for me, is what's the relationship between immensity and nihilism? Nihilism being the feeling that nothing matters, that nothing you do matters, that it's all just a big cosmic joke. And it's non-trivial to parse apart, because, I mean, just in this grand scope of things, you know, we are but a speck on a grain of sand, and there's many grains of sand out here. And for me personally, it doesn't, contemplating and trying to put myself in that feeling of being that speck and staring out at the immensity of things doesn't feel dark. It feels uplifting. But on an intellectual level, it of course means whatever I got going on in my life is just so is not that important. I mean, it's just not the whole story. Yeah. I think we'll revisit that. I think it's a really important question, because I think it's a totally reasonable connection to make, that I stare off in this thing and I see, you know, maybe hundreds of billions of stars out there. What does it matter what I do with my day? Okay, like I said, we'll revisit that a little bit later. Number three, how do religions contend with immensity? I don't know about you, but so I never grew up religious. But I've always had a deep interest in religions of all types, and I had not seen many religions talk about openly or contend with how to contextualize human life in the context of what we know the universe is, which is, you know, so massive. Basically, like, the story of God created the earth for humans. Obviously, not all religious people believe that by any means. But at that kind of makes sense if you believe that earth is at the center of the universe and everything out there is smaller. And we are a very unique species, all of which are, you know, not all that, those propositions don't hold up all that well. So yeah, what would it look like for Christianity or Islam or Buddhism to fully contend with the scale of our situation? Yeah, because what if there's a trillion stars? I don't know how many stars. I think there's a lot more than that too. You know, just say a trillion stars. And our little planet is just one of them. So what does any religion mean in that context? And of course, religions aren't just descriptions of the state of the natural world. And they're not just semi-scientific. Descriptions of reality. They're also proscriptions of what we should do with our lives and how to live better or worse. And of course, they can function perfectly fine in those other realms without ever wrestling with immensity, but they also often have at least some element of a description of reality. And in that sense, I'd love to see some more of it, some more wrestling. And if I miss something in that regard, a religion really that contemplates deeply, some religious scholar or something, or writing that deeply contemplates and then wrestles with the immensity of the universe, please do send it my way. This is a related question to the nihilism one, is how do you combine the awe of immensity and that feeling with the desire to move forward in your life? Because I guess nihilism is the sense again that nothing matters. It doesn't matter what choices I make. And the desire to move forward is kind of the opposite of that. It's what I do matters. What the decisions I make today are going to make my life better or worse tomorrow. And so on and so on and so on. Maybe the first thing I would note is that for me, when I go into that space of contemplating immensity, whether it's lying in the grass or just ruminating on the size of the universe, or, you know, whatever it may be that makes me feel kind of small, in some ways, it can get us out of our more negative mental habits, mental cycles, where we're ruminating on the little details of our lives that are annoying us, or that we have to do, or the little things that we're afraid of. So in some sense, it can, I think, contemplating immensity and putting our lives in context can put the dampers on some of our more, not toxic, but, you know, distracting mental behaviors. And in that sense, I think it could clear up space for us to be able to more fully align ourselves with what we want to do with our lives. Because maybe staring at the size of the universe makes it seem like, oh, I shouldn't be worried about, you know, that speeding ticket I got yesterday that really pissed me off or something. But maybe after contemplating the universe, I still do think about what it is I want to do with my life. And so maybe it doesn't wipe away all the meaning. It just shifts our focus a little bit towards a larger meaning within our life. And I think if I'm introspective, I think that's probably what happens why I like it, because it does really wipe the slate clean of all the little bullshit that I worry about. But it doesn't seem to destroy all the meaning. Yeah. Another question. What would it look like for someone to live consistently in the contemplation of immensity? Because as little ants walking around in this speck of sand, I mean, that's not the right image, is it? Because ants are bigger than a speck of sand. As little ants walking around on this hurtling marble that we call Earth, this spinning, you know, flying through the air marble, we tend to just keep our head down, forward. Okay, I'm going to the drugstore, thinking about that, thinking about the Bears game, and that kind of sucked. And all the things I have to do, because there's things I have to do, you know, get my kids ready to go off to preschool or go to work. And what am I going to do at work? What would it look like for someone to actually live consistently in that sense that they're blown away by how small they are? Or is this just something that we should spend, you know, a very small amount of time doing? A little flavorant to our life. Are there people who have ever got to the point where their life always feels in context? And if so, is that just way, way, way too much? Are those people depressed? I don't know. I think, I guess directionally, I think I probably would need to spend more time contemplating immensity and my scale in the universe. Not maybe all the time, but I do maybe need more. So if I do it now 1% of the time or 0.1% of the time, maybe I need 5% of my life spent doing that. But I don't know, maybe there's somebody who's figured out how to do that. And is just kind of living in that, has a stable enough realization of their context, of the immensity, that they can tap into that any moment. Another question is, how does the feeling of centrality relate to the feeling of immensity? And the feeling of centrality is that sense that I'm looking out on the world from a center, the point that is Brady, probably somewhere inside my brain, and then I'm looking out on the world, and the world is around me. And of course, this is just an artifact of having eyes and ears that collect information about the world and then do some processing in it about that data in our skulls. But of course, it's just pure fantasy. It's the world exists in its fullness, in no relation to us. We are not at its center. We are not at its periphery. This is kind of related to that music I had about I'm not the main character. And of course, that applies to everything. A star, a rock, a tree, a cloud. I'm not central in any of that. It just feels like it, but that's just pure optical illusion, right? So how does that feeling of centrality relate to our ability to tap into immensity? I think you can still have, obviously, you can still have that feeling of centrality. You can feel like a tiny little bug looking off at the universe and feel humbled and small by that, but you can still feel at the center to that. And then tangentially, you can tap into that sense that, oh, I'm not the center. I'm not the center of consciousness, and I'm also not just the center of matter or being. Like that tree over there is just fully in the center of the universe as much as I am by its own accords. I guess that I think they're kind of parallel. I just want more of them in my life. I want more time spent contemplating or living in that feeling of non-centrality. And I want more time spent contemplating or living in that feeling of immensity. But I would guess that the mental tools we have for developing those feelings is very similar. And for me, it's probably a lot of it is meditation. Just being able to sit still, notice when thoughts arise and not let them completely spin off for 10 hours, but just notice them come and notice them go. And then just more of that silence is going to give us more of a chance to tap into the actual state of things, which is we're not in the center. We are tiny in relation to everything else. And so this goes into my next question, which is how do we viscerally tap into it? We were describing something there as meditation as being a way to get into this feeling of immensity. I mean, if you give somebody a beautiful enough vista, I think anybody will feel that almost immediately. Like if you, a really starry sky, maybe you can see the Milky Way, the Big Dipper, or the moon so bright or something. Most people will be a bit dumbfounded, right? Or the Grand Canyon, or, you know, Yosemite. It's not just space that can do this. Obviously, this feeling of awe or immensity. I like space specifically because it is on such a large scale that it then threatens the very notions of the meaning of our lives. And so we have to wrestle with larger philosophical questions when we look out at the immensity of space. But the feeling of awe can come from so many other scales, obviously. But one thing I've been thinking about lately is, are there little mantras, little word tricks that we can get to tap ourselves into that feeling of immensity? If maybe all we're seeing is like a cloudy sky during the day, it's not nighttime, there's no grand vista that we're seeing. And one thing I was thinking, I've been trying lately, is like a question. It's like a cone, K-O-A-N. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. It's like a Zen puzzle. And it would be like, for me, like, what if the clouds are as far away as they seem? Because the thing that happens when you look out at the world is, it so often can take the feeling of two-dimensionality. Like it's a nice portrait written on a sphere, maybe. Or not portrait, like a nice painting done on a spherical wall that's above you or around you. And so it can have the, even though it's on a sphere, it can still have that feeling of two-dimensionality. And it can have the feeling that there's no space between you and it. The clouds are there. You know, it's small, they're small, but there's no space between you and it. So to contemplate, what if the clouds are just 6,000 feet away, and then, or, you know, 10,000 feet away? So to try to snap out of that in a moment, snap out of that sense that the universe is a painting, but no, it's three-dimensional. There's space between me and it. That's helped me a few times to pop into immensity in moments when not necessarily the most epic grand vistas are available. But I'm looking for more. And if you think of any mantras that you can use to tap yourself into immensity, I'd love to hear them. Yeah, just a few more here. Is focus the enemy of contemplating immensity? Like minute focus, like sometimes one of my favorite things to do as a small business owner is to work on spreadsheets that are looking at fine little details in my business. Often they're not all that useful, but it's just very fun for me to play with spreadsheets, and I get very focused. I live it, you know, very much in the moment. And in that moment, you know, stars don't exist for me. Galaxies don't exist. I mean, frick, my house doesn't exist. You know, hardly anything exists because you're just in that minute focus zone. And so is that the enemy of contemplating immensity? I mean, it's not the enemy, but I, the first thought that comes to mind when I think of an enemy in terms of mind state is more just absent-mindedness. You're just kind of in a fog. Because if you're developing the muscle of focus, then eventually you could then train that muscle onto larger things. But if you're just developing the muscle of, it's not a muscle, is it? Becoming flabby in your brain muscle and absent-minded, in which I, of course, always, you know, am doing 90% of my life, then when I go to contemplate immensity, I'm going to have a hard time because I have not been working on my focus muscle. So yeah, obviously in that moment when I'm in the spreadsheet zone, the whole rest of the universe has functionally disappeared for me. But actually, it's a great moment for that wake-up call, because then it can be that reminder. I just ask myself, has the universe disappeared? And of course it hasn't. It's just optical illusion again. And so in that moment, I can come back into, oh, it's all here. It's all here in this moment. Every star, every galaxy, every planet, every living being, it's all still here in this here-ness and now-ness. The last two questions. How do our phones impact our ability to appreciate immensity? One of the things I've noticed about myself is when I see a really beautiful vista, whether it's a sunrise, sunset, starry sky, my first intuition now, not my first maybe, but I'm real close to my first, is to grab my phone and take a picture of it. And, oh boy, I mean, that's, in some sense, it's a good, it's a connective thing, because I want to share that with my friends. I want to share that feeling with my friends, or that beautiful thing with my friends. So it's definitely pro-social, but it's taking what is a wordless experience, awe, and a humbling experience, and then turning it almost into a self-aggrandizing thing, like, look at this, a beautiful thing I experienced, and I'm going to share it, or post it on Facebook about, look at this beautiful starry sky that I got to see. It's almost like you take ownership of that picture of immensity. And of course, the picture always just fucking pales in comparison, doesn't it? It's not. It's like waving a stick at a redwood, or like waving a little 20 twig at a redwood. You can't take a good picture of a redwood with an iPhone. Maybe there's some phones you can take a good picture of a redwood with. But redwoods, you just kind of have to experience, you know, they're just so freaking big. And of course, if all we ever did was take photos of beautiful vistas with our iPhones, then it wouldn't be that bad a deal. But we also use it to distract ourselves in 1,000 other ways, don't we? So, yeah, I don't quite have a summation. I think all our intuition would be probably correct, is that if we want to really tap into immensity, we have to leave the phone inside. Because in some sense, immensity is best understood in silence, isn't it? And phones don't really encourage that, mental or verbal silence. Last little question. What if you were trying to maximize the amount of time you could spend in appreciation of the immensity of the universe, how would you eat? And it's kind of an odd question, isn't it? But one thing that I've noticed is that if I eat poorly, I'm feeling bloated or overfull, or I guess if I'm way too hungry too, it draws me out of my ability to take a relaxed, open stance towards the universe. And so yeah, I think it is our ability to contemplate profound things, to live in more uplifted, profound spiritual emotions is affected by, and of course it is, because we're physical creatures and our mind is a physical entity, affected by what we eat. And so I think there's some way of eating for me. It's not a diet per se. It's not even about physical health. It's just about trying to make it so my body, what's going on with my stomach, is not a distraction. I have the right amount of fuel. I'm not bloated. I'm not super hungry. And I'm not over full. And in that state, my stomach does not draw my mind down towards it. And if my stomach is relatively happy, then my mind is free to move up elsewhere, isn't it? And I'm a chronic overeater. And so I don't often, you know, you feel that heaviness after overeating. I think that's a spiritual heaviness too. And then it just draws the center of your spiritual attention downward naturally, because you often don't feel that good. You know, like that's something that needs my attention. That needs addressing, my stomach ache or something. So yeah, maybe there's just something to think, contemplate for yourself, is what would I eat for, you know, if a week or something, or a day, if I was just trying to maximize my ability to appreciate the scope of the universe and the scale of the universe. Anyway, thanks for listening in. As always, if you have any thoughts or guest suggestions, email me at happywhencurious@gmail.com. And I encourage you to go out and just spend more time staring up at the sky, because, boy, I might not be able to get a whole lot of answers, but it sure is nice. Anyway, we'll see you next week on Happy When Curious.